Radio Influence. The future is now.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on RadioInfluence.com.
Hey, it's me. You know what it is. It's time for the Babe Cast. I love it when we do that. It's called the podcast, but I prefer to call it the Babe Cast because I am the Fabulous Sports Babe. I must tell you many things. First and foremost, we finally thought we'd get through the combine, and then we talked to Rick Saratella, who's going to join us from the NFL Draft Bible, and we will talk everything about the combine. And at first I said, well, let's do that before, and then I thought, no, let's do it afterwards. The fact that I had the flu the week before, you know what? I got the flu. I'll tell you exactly what I did. I woke up. I was sitting across from Jerry, who was coughing. His hand was covered. He was very good. Within less than 24 hours, I was dying in bed. And he went outside and coughed. He wasn't like spilling something, but he was spilling obviously something on me. Because at 4 o'clock in the morning, I get up and I'm like, oh my God, I don't have the zinc and I don't have the elderberry crap. And I'm like, oh God. I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I drive to Walmart, the one that's open all the time. The fact that I wasn't killed going in there, I mean, let's get serious, you know, where I live and everything. And I'm thinking, if you're there at 4 o'clock in the morning like me, aren't you pretty much in deep trouble? If you're going through there, like I'm going in there shifting things, but people are like wandering in, looking around. And I'm thinking, well, they're in much worse condition than I am. All right. So I go in there and I get all my stuff. I get back. I take all this stuff. I really don't remember anything. I think in the middle, didn't I write to you in the middle? I think I wrote to you in the middle of the night and said, I have some kind of monkey cough thing. I don't know what's going on with me. Oh, it was brutal. And you know what? I'm one of those people that gets a flu shot. And unlike everybody else that goes, oh, I don't get the flu shot, I have to get the flu shot. Because if I don't, I'll be horrible. And I thought, I'm telling you, it's like the last week didn't really exist. I kind of like sort of remember going there and getting the stuff at 4 o'clock in the morning and I could hardly walk. And then I came back here and I started taking so much stuff that I don't even know what I took. You know, like more Tylenol, more of the elderberry, whatever the hell that thing is. And I don't know. And they say, suck on it. Okay, I'm doing that and I'm doing the zinc thing. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, we went through that and that's why Rick Saratella is with us and that's why we have the NFL Draft Bible, and it's so good to talk to him about it because he was there. And he said, wait till you find out. He said that guy, what's his name, Goff, the guy from the Bears? I think he was kind of an asshole so that somebody would take him and not be, he doesn't want to go to the Browns. Nobody wants to go to the Browns. I don't blame you for that at all. We'll talk a bit about that. We'll get to see, and I don't want to say anything, but not for nothing. Yes, I do watch those stupid Buccaneers. There's no secret that I watch them. But I have to tell you something. If you don't get Zeke Elliott, because I don't believe anybody else is going to be around, you don't have anybody, you're going to be very, very sorry about him. All right, let's go do the thing. I'm not even, now that I think about it, I might have to go back to bed. Oh, maybe there's a Team Ninja. I hate that Ninja Warrior. What's it called? I hate that team. Let me do something else. I happen to be the fabulous. Is that fabulous? Let me try that again. I happen to be the fabulous sports babe. It's time for the Babe Cast. He's the guy from the NFL Draft Bible. I love talking to him anyway. Rick, let's find out. I'm watching a little bit of the TV that I'm falling asleep, and I'm watching it, but this is what I got out of this. That the offensive linemen and the defensive linemen are almost as bad as the wide receivers when it comes to running the 40. That's about the only thing I saw.
Yeah, we saw an incredible slow 40 times this year. And yeah, you mentioned the wide receivers. The average time this year was 4.56, and last year it was 4.50. But we're hearing maybe there was some technical glitches with the NFL. I'm starting to hear whispers come out of the combine. So we'll see if that story develops. However, unlike the wide receivers, the defensive line is loaded with talent, yeah, loaded with studs, and especially that defensive tackle position is as deep as I've ever seen.
One of the things that we talk about, I guess the best thing to say to you is who's up and who's down and what you saw. Were there people that went in there you thought were going to do well and didn't do very well? Or how did it come out for you?
Well, you know, I think it's very important to not get too overblown with things in the NFL scouting combine. We don't want to get too high and we don't want to get too low. The film never lies, but yes, I mean, you know, you take a look at a guy like Noah Spence who came out and blew up the Senior Bowl a couple weeks ago. Everybody was looking for him to run a fast 40. He didn't quite do that. Now, does that mean the stock drops? Probably not, just because there's not a lot of pass rushers. If it does, it's probably more off the field stuff. But then you got guys like Darren Lee from Ohio State who comes out and he's a linebacker running faster than a lot of the running backs. And so you say, hey, well, you know, he was a borderline first round guy, maybe early second. Hey, you know what? With that kind of lack of pass rushers, maybe he slides up into that second part of the first round. And, you know, from a quarterback perspective, I think everybody was curious to see, especially from a Carson Wentz versus Jared Goff standpoint, and they put them in separate throwing groups. They wanted to see who was going to shine, who was going to step up. And I know a big deal was made about the size of Jared Goff's hands, and it sounds silly, but then, you know, you listen to a guy like Hugh Jackson speak about, hey, well, we play in the AFC North. We play in cold weather. We want guys who can hold on to that football in the snow and the rain and bad weather conditions. So there is some factor into it. And then you take in consideration that Carson Wentz came out and just really looked the part. I mean, this guy owned the moment. He was loose. He was joking around with the coaches. The players were gravitating towards him. And then, you know, you say personality doesn't have anything to do with it. I mean, you take a look at Jared Goff. He's tight. He's uptight. He's getting into it with reporters. So I think it was a big week of a lot of winners, a lot of losers, and, you know, guys treading up and guys turning down. And a lot of it has to do with medical, too, which we don't have access to. But that plays a big role as well.
You know, one of the things, I mean, we can start with the quarterbacks, but by the time you finish whatever, you know, bowl game you're in, from that moment, the next day, they start doing this. And it's getting to the point now that although we've seen this combine a lot, but so many people are ready for the 40. They're ready for all kinds of drills that they're supposed to do that they've gotten a handle on it. Do you know what I mean? It's not like I can put me up there and say, you got to do all this. I can do all of that in the combine. That doesn't mean I can do it in the NFL.
It's amazing how far this combine training has come in. It goes back to every time around this year, we get the Mike Mamula articles because he was the first guy to really hire a trainer to teach him how to do all these combine drills. Now, we're talking about the top-ranked guys, these first-round prospects, agents are spending $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 just to train these guys for what essentially is the biggest interview of their life. And every year, the combine gets bigger and bigger. They added 200 more media members, 1,200 media members this year. And just 10 years ago, it was, you know, 10 media members hanging around a room.
What do we see now? I mean, as you say, I mean, I saw that Zeke Elliott did well, and I saw that Henry did, and it was interesting because Henry's the guy that everyone's talking about, yet it seems that Zeke Elliott did a little bit better when you look at the top 25 or the top 50, when you look at it, the combine afterwards.
Well, yeah, I think what you saw with Ezekiel Elliott, and you mentioned it, babe, with the training, he was so prepared for it. And while Derrick Henry exceeded expectations, he ran a 4.55 at 250 pounds. I mean, 6'3" tall. He's a linebacker, essentially playing running back. But then you look at Ezekiel Elliott, and boy, it's like effortless. Like he's not even exerting energy. And you say, oh man, boy, what a slow start. And then there he is crossing the 40-yard dash line with the 4.4 something. But I think it goes back to production. And, you know, Derrick Henry is 6'3". Not too many running backs at that size, plotter type of style. I mean, Eddie George was a tall guy, but I think the better comparison here is maybe a Brandon Jacobs. And, you know, he's a stand-up runner, so he's got to be really in the right system, where I think you could take a guy like Ezekiel Elliott and his talent, you could put him into any system.
Well, it seems like I think they just called him the real deal is what they said about Zeke. And I'm like a big fan of Ohio State, so that's stupid. But I do like him. But one of the things about Zeke, and I'll go beyond this, but he's taken like 600 hits since he's been there. And you wonder, can he last for 4 years in the NFL?
You know, and that's the thing is these running backs, lifespan, you know, guys like that that come in with a lot of hits, they go on to the next level. And then, you know, even in a running back by committee, the NFL game is 16 games now. And, you know, everybody's bigger, stronger, faster. So I think it's really a big reason as to why you've seen the running back position devalued, and we didn't have a running back taken in the first round for a couple of years. And, you know, the guys like a Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, that are kind of a rare talent, I think those are the guys now that you will see go in the first round. And otherwise, I think teams will sit back and wait to draft a running back.
If you take the first, let's say, 10, because one of the things I found interesting is they say, okay, you've got 32 teams in the first round, whatever it is, but your first 10, they're definitely going to be good. Then I think to myself, well, what if I'm 17 and 26? Does that mean that I'm going to get maybe a good guy or not a good guy? How do you see that?
Well, this year's draft, while it might not have the star-studded power at the top, it doesn't have the surefire franchise running back, this is a pretty deep draft. I mean, I think you're going to get guys that fall into the third round where you can legitimately consider them possible starters at the next level. And, you know, we talked about the defensive tackle position. I mean, we got about 10 guys here with a first round grade. Obviously, they're not all going to go in the first round. So I think some of those guys are going to slide to the second round. And, hey, you know, I was doing a Giants show earlier, and they were saying, should we draft defensive tackle? Well, if you're a number 10 and there's a dozen guys with a first-round grade at defensive tackle, chances are maybe six or seven most are going to get taken in the first round. You might be able to get a guy at number 40 that, you know, has a first-round grade. So I think it's a good draft when it comes to depth, despite the fact that we don't have that sexy franchise quarterback.
You're right about the sexy franchise. We do have, you know, I look at Goff and I look at Wentz, and I think of Lynch. And you said it was really interesting because Lynch is represented by Lee Steinberg. And I thought it was kind of interesting because the first thing, the day he finished his bowl game, the next day they put him on and you could see him. He was very comfortable at that combine. You know, and you could see the way that they handled him and how you could see it, you know, and because I wonder about you, when you're there and you're watching this, do you have agents talking to you or other agents? I mean, how do they talk to you more about it? Or is it more, okay, this guy is doing this? I mean, I think that they would give you more information, I think.
Oh, yeah, the agents are always, you know, and the thing is you got to sometimes take things with a grain of salt. And, you know, I know Lee, and he's really made a big comeback with some of the players, Paxton Lynch being one of them. You know, we remember when Lee Steinberg used to represent all the first round quarterbacks coming out, it seems like. But, you know, you do get some agents, believe it or not, who are honest and say, hey, well, you know, this kid had an issue here, issue there, but he's really a good kid. And then you have to go back and really dig in and find out for yourself. But, you know, yeah, I think Lynch and Wentz were more comfortable. And we mentioned Goff, he was kind of standoffish. And they asked him about the hand size. And they said, oh, are you concerned? And he said, oh, well, how many fumbles did I have last year? And the reporter said 4. And he goes, oh, I thought so. And, you know, they asked him, well, what did you learn this week? And he was kind of sarcastic / pissed off, like, oh, well, I learned I had small hands. And, you know, to me, I think, like you said, the way they prepare athletes for this event, not only on the field, but the media training is a big part of it, too. And I've had agents tell me, hey, can you talk to my guy, prepare him for the media, tell him what to expect, what he should say, how to handle it. And, you know, we do some of that stuff. We have them come on our shows and we interview them and we ask them a lot of the similar questions that NFL teams are going to ask them. But by the time you get to the combine, whether you're genuine or trained up, you're getting these sample questions. You should be prepared for that. You should know how to conduct yourself, and you should know how to answer that, because honestly, the other part of the combine we don't have access to is those 15-minute interviews.
Right.
And that's really where these guys are getting grilled, chalk talk, break down your offense, taking through your 2-minute drill. It's 3rd and 5. What play you're going to call, taking through your reads. And I think that's really where a lot of it makes or breaks the prospect.
You know, when you're talking about that, we'll talk about Goff for a minute. I'm thinking there are people there who sometimes somebody's going to ask him about his hands, but it's some guy who isn't in the, you know, let's say at the combine, and he's some guy that needs something for a radio station or newspaper or something, and he doesn't need to get ugly with them, because that's one of the things I found. No matter how many times they ask you, there's somebody that doesn't know, and you got to ask, you got to answer them instead of, do I have to answer that again?
Yeah, and you know, babe, we're living in this new generation, this world of all about clicks and how many likes and how many retweets,
right,
and who's going to recycle my story. And, you know, the thing is, the players need to understand this. There's 1,200 media members there, and each one of them have an angle.
Right.
And they're all fighting for the clicks. They're all fighting for the storyline. Who's going to twist your words and make it into a story? And that's where you have to be careful. And, again, it comes into the preparation and being prepared. And to me, Jared Goff just was not prepared for that.
Let's talk a little bit about the defensive back. The defensive, I guess the cornerbacks and the safeties were damn good, at least from what I saw.
Yeah, they came out there flying around, and it was a big relief, because we mentioned the wide receivers. It was kind of disappointing. And Adidas, they anteed up last year. They were giving away $100,000. This year they said, we'll give out $1 million to anybody who can break Chris Johnson's record. And, you know, his record was safe this year, but a lot of guys came out. Jalen Ramsey, who actually was a track and field star at Florida State, came out, owned the event. Eli Apple, you mentioned Ohio State.
It
seems like their whole starting defense is going to get drafted. I think they have 7 draftable guys, plus if you count Noah Spence, who started off at Ohio State, and the safety, Jeremy Cash, is now at Duke. I mean, there's going to be 9 guys from Ohio State starting defense 2 years ago drafted. But Eli Apple came out, showed he had the size, showed he had the speed, and there's really an elite group in the cornerback spots with Ramsey, with Hargraves. Mackenzie Alexander is also in that class. And, you know, Ramsey is the most interesting guy, because I have him right there at the top. Between him and Laramie Tunsil are my 2 favorite guys in this draft. And I'll put Jalen Ramsey, you know, Eric Berry's a pending free agent. We'll see if the Chiefs franchise him today or not. But if you remember Berry coming out, he was kind of this guy. He could play corner, he could play safety. Ultimately, he got drafted to the Chiefs. He's been an all-pro safety. God bless his soul. He's come back after cancer and become even a better player,
right,
amazingly. And now, you know, Jalen Ramsey is really right on par, if not a higher-rated prospect coming out of Florida State. I mean, this guy's a transcending talent. I don't see how he lasts past the top 5 picks.
What about on the other side in Hargraves? I mean, he's less than Ramsey, but he's not stupid. I mean, he's good.
Oh, he's very good. And, you know, the difference here is 2 inches. You know, everything is really moving towards that big, taller, physical corner that you can put on the outside. And I'm not saying that Vernon Hargraves can't do that, but fortunately for him, he won't have to guard a guy like Megatron and Calvin Johnson. But there's still the Alshon Jeffries and the Brandon Marshalls of the world, where, you know, Vernon Hargraves is 5'11", Jalen Ramsey is 6'1". I think that's where you give the edge to Ramsey. But all of these guys, I mean, all of them, all came out at the podium and said, hey, I'm the best guy. Jalen Ramsey, Vernon Hargraves, Mackenzie Alexander, they all said, I'm the best cornerback. I think they actually said, I'm the best player in the draft. But we all know cornerbacks, the elite ones anyway, don't seem to lack confidence.
Well, and one of the things, too, I have to tell you, I think one of the people that started to do it, I saw it in Seattle, and it seemed like that Carroll was doing it, which is he was beginning to get that 6'2", 6'3", guys in the defensive backfield. And a lot of people, I mean, I was just, and it's no secret, I live in Tampa, and that's, you know, the team that I'm going to look more towards. And they were too busy looking at 5'10", and I'm like over that. I don't want anybody that's 5'10" anymore. I want you 6 feet and above if you're going to be in the defensive backfield. I can't use that 5'10" anymore. That doesn't make any sense to me.
And that's the thing, too, is we had this conversation at the NFL Draft Bible where, you know, in recent years, I think this is the evolution of the college game, because everything is based more on the perimeter, on the outside. Everything is more spread out and pass-orientated. I mean, the NFL is 60% pass, for crying out loud. If you run the ball 45%, that's considered a lot. But I can never remember a time in my life covering the draft 14 years, I've never seen so many cornerbacks listed at 6 feet and above. Whereas in years past, you know, there might be a handful of guys But I think it speaks volumes to what, you know, the college teams are doing. You know, traditionally where these guys, they might have recruited them out of high school and put them at wide receiver. They're now putting these guys at cornerback because of the spread out game and the speed. And now everybody wants to get bigger and faster on the outside. And you're starting to see that now, with some of the safeties coming in and playing linebacker. I mean, you see now Arizona do it. The Rams are now doing it. The Panthers are doing it. So you're starting to see some safeties come and play linebacker. I think the game is going towards that fast, tall, physical type of hybrid guy. And hybrid used to be a dirty word. And when you talk about the secondary guys, you know, it's actually adding value to their draft stock.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about the Rams when you just brought it up, we just forget that they're going to be there. And is it just going to be the biggest thing in the world, or is it just going to be, the Rams are getting another draft choice? How do you see that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they're one of these teams that seems to always be picking there, and you know, they're there again, and they're moving out to L.A. I think they need to draft an immediate impact type of player. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, too, you're moving into a new fan base. You need to make a splash. You need to sell tickets. And you need to get better. They're playing in a tough division, Seattle, Arizona. Until last year, San Francisco was at the top, too. And they took a risk. They rolled the dice last year. We talked about Todd Gurley. And everybody, you know, I think half the people were like, hey, he's so good, you got to get him. And half the people were kind of skeptical and saying, hey, what are you doing? You need a guy who can come in and impact immediately. And
right.
Yeah, he didn't really play the first half of the season, but I think they're happy now that they have him. And the one thing we heard Jeff Fisher say, where, you know, last year at this combine, he came out and he endorsed Sam Bradford as his quarterback, said, no doubt we're going into battle with Sam Bradford. He's our guy. There's no questions about it. And, you know, now this year he said the same thing essentially about Case Keenum. And I don't think anybody's buying that logic this year. I think the Rams are very much in contention for a quarterback. We hear the Eagles might franchise Bradford. You look at the free agency, you know, will Brock Osweiler be out there? If he is, you're going to have to overpay for him. And I don't think the Rams can go into the season with Case Keenum as a quarterback. So I do think that they are going to have to explore the opportunity to really draft a quarterback. And hey, they made a bargain deal out of the RG3 trade a few years ago. I think they got 3 first round picks in exchange. Unfortunately, those first round picks and the picks that they stockpiled hasn't really translated to the success. However, they are now talking about a contract extension for Jeff Fisher, so he must have some blackmail on somebody over there.
Well, he must be, because I figured they must have told him, don't worry, we're going to L.A. I figured that's why he got there, to the Rams to begin with. Rick, tell people how to get the Draft Bible. Tell them how to find out about it.
Oh, well, you can find us, obviously, on NFLDraftBible.com. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. And we got about 200 interviews from the Scouting Combine, babe, so we're going to be launching those bad boys out there. And I always love coming on, talking some NFL draft with you. I know you're passionate about it, and I'm glad to see you're back on the air and feeling better. We definitely missed you.
Thank you, honey. I appreciate that. Let me just talk some rumors thing. One of the things that's coming to my mind is Colin Kaepernick. Now, that's nice that he wants to move, but is he going anywhere? What are you hearing all the rumors out there?
Well, you know, that was really one of the more awkward situations at the Scouting Combine, because here comes Chip Kelly trotting out here saying Colin Kaepernick wants to remain a 49er, and Trent Baalke saying, hey, you know, Colin Kaepernick's not going anywhere. And then, you know, within maybe not even an hour or two later, there's Colin Kaepernick's agent out there on social media saying, hey, we've requested a trade. We don't want to be there. So it's going to be an interesting situation to see. I think that April, somewhere in the first or second week of April, the 49ers are going to have to make a business decision, because Colin Kaepernick will be guaranteed, I think it's something like $11 million or something like that, guaranteed on the cap. And if they're going to guarantee him on the books, they better make sure they have a happy camper and somebody who wants to play there. But you take a look at the turnover there in San Francisco.
Right.
Since Jim Harbaugh retired, they had a bunch of guys retire, not want to play, sign elsewhere. So, you know, we'll see what the Chip Kelly situation brings, but in terms of their quote unquote franchise quarterback, it's not off to a good start. It's actually a rocky relationship. I don't know how much the two of them have chatted, but I think Colin Kaepernick has finally been fed up and kind of wants out now too. And you've seen Vernon Davis get out of there, Michael Crabtree, Anthony Davis, mm-hmm. Patrick Willis, Chris Borland, the list goes on and on and on. And right now, San Francisco is not a friendly destination for the NFL free agents.
You know, and one of the things, too, is that, you know, everybody wants out all the time. And one of them is RG3. I'm like the last person that believes he can still have a career. I might be the very last person that believes that. But for some reason, I think Houston's looking for somebody. I mean, if Houston ever had a quarterback, I'm better than what they have. And they're horrible. They should get somebody down there because they have a decent team, yet they don't have a quarterback that works for them.
Absolutely. And, you know, that playoff game was brutal. You saw DeAndre Hopkins even on the sideline saying, you know, get this guy out of here. He don't know how to play the game. And you're right. I mean, they need a quarterback badly. Whether RG3 is the answer remains to be seen. I don't think that they'll trade for him. I don't think anybody can trade for him because he is due $15 million next year. So I think what teams are waiting for is to see, you know, not if, but when the Redskins cut him, how much will he cost on the open market? And I think, you know, Bill O'Brien's is going to be in an interesting situation because I do think that there's a very good chance at that top half of the second round that his college quarterback, Christian Hackenberg, who enjoyed his best season under Bill O'Brien his freshman year, enjoyed an incredible amount of success. Mm-hmm. Hackenberg could very well be there available at the top part of the second round. And should Bill O'Brien bypass on him not only one time in the first round, but two times in the second round, then that should send out warning signals. And if that happens, then Hackenberg could really slide. And, you know, there's a guy whose draft stock is all over the place. You see him maybe in the first, maybe in the second, maybe on day three. But I think if Houston bypasses on him twice, that cannot be a good sign.
You know, let me ask you about some of the other things that we've seen in here. I'm kind of thinking about the draft and where it will be. But let me ask you, Joey Bosa, everybody, we love Joey Bosa and all that. And the other guy is DeForest Buckner, the guy from Oregon. Are they similar? Are they really similar? One guy's going to get Joey, the next people are going to get DeForest. It's okay. But are they that similar or not?
Yeah, I mean, they're both top 10 picks. They're both guys that, you know, are being viewed at that can play in multiple schemes. I think you can state a case for them kicking inside and playing defensive tackle. I think you can also state a case for them playing outside and being a pass rusher, whether it's in a 4-3 or 34. But I think they are similar in this way. They're best suited as a 3-4 defensive end. And I think that while everybody loves the 4-3 pass rusher, I think these guys' roles are best suited in a 3-4 where they can hold containment, but also bring a pass rush style element. And, you know, Bosa, you hear compared to J.J. Watt so often, mm-hmm. but, you know, let's be honest, nobody's like J.J. Watt. But, yeah, can he bring that pass rushing dimension or that outside edge element and get after the quarterback? Absolutely. Now, DeForest Buckner, you know, he weighs maybe 15, 20 pounds more, so
right. –
You know, if you do kick him inside, I think he can play 4-3 defensive tackle. You bulk up, you know, another 10 pounds. Now he's at the 300 range, and you're talking about a guy now who could play like a Gerald McCoy, maybe, you know, 300-pounder, but also gets a fair amount of sacks. And I think both of these guys are what you call in that tier one category, and, you know, they'll probably both be off the board top 10, if not top 5.
You know, one of the things as I look at it, I was thinking about the defensive lineman, and I'm doing that, and I'm thinking of Akeem Spence. A lot of people were saying, oh, that would be really good for the Bucs and things like that. And then I'm thinking, this guy can't even play in the Big Ten anymore. So he has so many off-the-field problems right now that he was at Ohio State, and then he ended up at, like, some other place at Eastern Kentucky or something like that. But he has some, quote, off-the-field problems. I mean, enough that they said you can't ever be in the Big Ten again?
Yeah, you know, he got booted off Ohio State for an ecstasy, you know, came up in his drug testing, and you know what
an
his agent will tell you, and
what he will tell you is that, hey, I'm sorry, what an idiot.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Come on.
Well, you know, and they say either you're an idiot or you have a problem, an addiction problem. And,
yes.
You know, what the situation is, you know, I'm sure the NFL teams will find out and investigate that. I think the one thing going in his favor is that it's not a big pass rush draft class. And, you know, I always subscribe to the one dumb owner rule. And it only takes one owner or one GM or one coach to fall in love with you and say, hey, give me that guy. I can work with him. And the fact of the matter is, if you can get after the quarterback, that's a rare skill set. And that's a need that almost every team has or wants to improve. And for that matter, you know, somebody's going to overlook that, roll the dice and
right.
say, hey, you know, either he's going to work out or he's not. But you look at Randy Gregory, what just happened to him, the smoke screen signals were there and
mm-hmm.
the Cowboys rolled the dice and now they're paying the penalty.
One of the things that we talked about Zeke Elliott and we talk about Henry. And here's the thing, like it or not, I still run the 40 and 29 flat. And I did that 10 years ago and I'm still just as good today. So they can get me out there and do it, and I'll be fine doing all of that. But if I've got Joey Bosa, and I'm thinking that he's the guy that I want, if you don't have him in the first four or five rounds, what do you do afterwards? Do you say, this guy is second, this guy is third? Do you go like that or say, these guys are really great, especially from the defensive line? Because I've found that the guys on the defensive line are a hell of a lot better than they used to be 5 and 10 years ago. They're really good now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, each team has to take it by a case-by-case scenario. You know, some teams are going to be looking for this, and some teams subscribe to the best player available philosophy. And, of course, we have the free agent frenzy coming to us on March 9th, which is also going to play a huge factor because, you know, there's teams out there with cap space. There's teams out there with no cap space. And so that'll all dictate and be worked into the equation. But I think really the best teams do their homework and they understand, you know, which positions are at strength, which positions lack depth. And then they take a look at their depth chart and say, hey, well, what do we need? And then, you know, kind of bring the best of both worlds together and say, hey, well, you know, this guy is our best player on the board mm-hmm. and we really need some depth at this position. And if you look at the teams that have had the most success, the teams with the most success have really done a good job of saying goodbye to their players a year too early
mm-hmm.
rather than holding on to them a year too late and then building through the draft. And you think of the Steelers and the Ravens and the Patriots and the Packers and some of the teams that do that well have really understood. And then there's the teams like the Patriots also will trade out of that first round and stockpile picks. And you know, there's value to that too if you know how to draft. And I always say that, hey, you can get a starter in every round of the draft. You should be trying to gain a starter because every year there's starters in day one, there's starters in day two, day three. There's undrafted free agents who mm-hmm. go on to start. So my personal objective would be I would look to try to find a starter every round. But at the same time, you have to know the board, you have to do your homework, you have to know where the depth is, and you have to be aware of, you know, your pending free agents and what the market is looking like.
How much do you like Tunsil? Tell me about him. I mean, he seems to be the number one guy for you, right?
Yeah, I think Tunsil on the offense and Ramsey on the defense, I think Tunsil is really head and shoulders above the rest of the tackle class, and Ronnie Stanley's probably number two, but I think there's a significant drop-off, and you'll see that because I think Tunsil will probably go number one to Tennessee, and Stanley, you know, I'd be surprised if he goes in the top 10 at this point, but Tunsil, I mean, he's a road grinder, he's a pass block specialist. He moves around, incredible agility. He can leave him outside one-on-one coverage. And, you know, he's got a proven resume. He's done it year after year in that SEC. Now, you know, his teammate, his buddy, Robert Kendiche, didn't do him any favors this week because, you know, that was to me one of the more surprising storylines in Indianapolis where, Kendiche, who, you know, you may or may not know the story about the synthetic marijuana, but they found 6 or 7 pre-rolled joints in the hotel room, and he got giddy and hopped out the hotel window and fell 10 feet from a wall.
the interesting thing in Indianapolis, they interviewed Kimdiche, and he said, yeah, you know, well, yeah, there was marijuana in the room, but it wasn't mine. I was actually drinking. And yeah, oh, by the way, Laramie Tunsil was in the room with me.
Yeah.
And, you know, way to throw your teammate under the bus. But, you know, when you go on to the next level, I guess, you know, friends no longer exist.
Do you think, is it, I mean, okay, I grew up as a 5-year-old Patriots fan, and I still am one, no matter what. But is it just that we look at the way that they do it, and they go, how did they get to this point? And yet, you know, they were on the verge of going back to a Super Bowl. I get that they didn't and all that. But why are certain teams like the Steelers, like the Patriots, that are always good? I mean, is there one guy or there are three guys that decide who they're going to get that they have? As you said, somebody goes away and then they put another guy in there. Or you may get somebody in the third round, but in another year, he's going to be the first round of whatever that is. But even though they got him in the third round and they get rid of somebody in the defensive or the offensive line, but it works. And I'm not so sure that everybody does it together. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like this guy makes a decision, this guy makes a decision. It seems, why are people like the Steelers and the Patriots so much better?
That's correct. And I think a big part of it is, you know, covering the NFL draft, I can tell you firsthand, it's a year-round basis. I mean, you're trying to take 2,500 guys and consolidate it down to 250 guys who get drafted. So no one man can ever cover all the bases.
Right.
And I think what you find here is, you know, where the Patriots, Bill Belichick will get a lot of the credit, but if you look and dig a little bit deeper and peel back the layers, he's always got a right-hand man, whether that be Scott Pioli, Thomas Dimitroff. You take a look at Dan Quinn now, who's gone on to GM the Detroit Lions. He has a guy that he entrusts that is the college recruiter in a way and goes about this year round now, whereas a lot of organizations, I talked to Vinny Serrato a couple years ago, and he said, yeah, as an organization, we don't even delve into the draft process until the bowl games. So, you know, they ignore, you know, the first 7 months of the college football season, and then here come, you know, the coaches can't really evaluate these guys until their season ends. So if they don't make the playoffs, they get a jump on the scouting early. But hey, if you're a team like the Panthers, for say, and you go all the way to the Super Bowl, hey, your season just got extended into February. You got to finish up the season and then get ready for the combine in 2 weeks. But I think most importantly, what you will find is that a third of the league is comprised of undrafted free agents, and the teams who know how to find undrafted free agents, which means what? You did your homework and you know the depth of the draft and you know the guys who didn't get drafted that can still play in this league, because, you know, the Patriots and Packers are pretty much the two most successful teams in terms of finding those undrafted free agents. If you look at their roster, 45-50% of their roster consists of undrafted free agents. And, you know, you see these guys that they take, the Julian Edelman will take a quarterback, turn him into a wide receiver, Malcolm Butler, you know, Super Bowl MVP. I mean, they seem to find these guys. So, you know, for every draft pick that they miss, they're signing five undrafted free agents that can contribute.
I love talking with you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, because it was good that we got to see all of the combine and now we can talk about it. But thank you so much. We'll do everything that we have to do for you for your draft Bible thing. We'll do all of that. But as always, Rick, I do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, I can't wait, babe. And I thank you for having me on. Can't wait to chat again. And of course, always good to hear from you. Draft pick that they missed, that they're signing five undrafted free agents that can contribute.
I love talking with you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, because it was good that we got to see all of the combine and now we can talk about it. But thank you so much. We'll do everything that we have to do for you for your draft Bible thing. We'll do all of that. But as always, Rick, I do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, I can't wait, babe. And I thank you for having me on. Can't wait to chat again. And of course, always good to hear from you.
How much did we love that? I love, love, love the NFL Draft Bible. Thank you, Rick Zeratella. It's the best. He's got like 200 interviews. Can I ever do 200? I don't think so, because I just get tired and do stuff. In the middle of that, you want to catch everybody that was there? He's going to do it. You can always go and find it out. Look in the NFL draft. You'll find it all the time. It's the draft Bible that you like about it. Do we have things going on? No, we're going to do this right now because everybody wants to know about it. And I don't want to say anything, but really, somebody's going to do this and somebody's going to do that, but nothing's really going to happen until we get to the real draft. Is the draft the very, is it December? Not December. Now for our English speaking friends, it's the end of April, but now they might make it in May. Because at first it was like, remember, can I have a minute to do this? I wonder how long, does anybody remember when the draft was 17 rounds long? And we were little, but we would turn into BZ in Boston at WBZ. And like at 15 and 45, Gil Santos or somebody like that would be doing the draft thing. And we'd be like, oh, who's number one and who's number two? And it used to be, did I ever tell you one time that I actually got, I guess it was Tom Flores was running the Seattle Seahawks. And I asked him, can I have the last draft? And this was in the thing. And they said, what? And I said, I want to do the last guy. And of course, nobody has the balls to say that. So of course, I'm standing up going, I want the last guy. And I think they were so shocked, they didn't know what else to do. So they said, okay, we'll just give it to her. And they gave it to me. And I said, they said, well, we want an offensive or a defensive lineman. So I looked for all of my guys that I like. And I can't remember his name. I thought his name was Blackburn, but I don't think that's him. But he played like for three teams and he like made a paycheck for like, you know, six years. He made a paycheck and he was a guy like in the 12th round, 10th round, something like that. Nobody would believe that I asked him. Of course I asked him. What else was I going to do? I am the fabulous sports babe. It's called the Babecast.
If you know the babe at all, you know the show never ends. Don't believe me, just watch. Follow her on Twitter at Real Sports Babe and subscribe to the show on iTunes. This is the fabulous sports babe on Radio Influence.
Radio Influence strives to bring you the best in digital media broadcasting. We have something for everyone. National sports radio talents like the fabulous Sports Babe and Rich Herrera. Huge podcasts like Wrestling Soup and the MMA Insiders with Jason Floyd and Sam Kaplan. News and current event shows like Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill. And shows that'll make you think like Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger. We've got you covered. You can find all our shows on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.